on their ancestral lands. Come back for the second part of this speech when TUC Radio returns. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.
This is WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. You can listen to Time of Useful Consciousness every Monday on WEFT Community Radio. At 5:30 each weekday, you can hear a different program of information and analysis. On Mondays, we bring you Disability Beat. Then at 6, stay tuned for In Place of the Friday Forum Lecture Series, Talk Nation Radio, a discussion with Chris Williams on how Paris set the Earth on a course to burn. Chris Williams wrote the book Ecology and Socialism, Solutions to Capitalist Ecological Crises. He is a longtime environmental activist with a scientific background and has authored numerous articles on the science and politics of climate change and energy for various media outlets. He's a writer in residence at Truth Out and an educator and professor at Pace University in the Department of Chemical and Physical Sciences. And he'll be discussing climate change after Paris. That's coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. This hour, programming on WEFT is sponsored by the Jet's Pizza. Jet's Pizza uses only premium ingredients, including dough made fresh daily. Jet's Pizza stores are located at 512 South Neal Street in Champaign. Their phone number is 217-352-3333. And their other location is 1907 West Springfield Avenue. That phone number is 217-352-9992. You can order online as well at jetspizza.com. And we at WEFT are working hard to improve our community radio station. Over the next few months, you'll be noticing a lot of positive changes in response to your feedback. We ask that you support our WEFT Vision 2020. If you haven't yet responded to our annual winter appeal, please take a few minutes to make your donation. This is a tax-deductible donation. You can throw a check in the mail and send it to WEFT P.O. Box 1223, Champaign, Illinois, 61824-1223. You can also go to our website and make installment payments or a monthly payment of any amount at weft.org/support. And every penny goes directly into our basic operating costs for WEFT. And remember, it's tax deductible. You have a few more days to get that donation in and claim it on your 2015 taxes. Disability Beat is also sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law at 217-384-1111 for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana, with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now Disability Beat, pre-recorded for air at this time.
Hi, my name is Kathy Testori from CTF YAC and Teen Connect program. You are listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. Community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its Board of Directors, Associate Station Manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm thrilled to death to have on the program today Tim Harris of Tim's Place. Now, Tim is quite the media star in the last couple of years since he opened his restaurant in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I most recently saw him on CNN about 2 weeks ago and just on an outside chance decided to try and contact him and see if he might be willing to be on the show. And thrill of thrills, he and his dad are both here with us today. So welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Vicki.
So, Tim, let's start with you. How long ago was it that you started your restaurant?
I've been wanting to want a restaurant ever since I was a kid.
Really? And so do you like to cook?
I'm not the cook, but I'm the restaurant owner, and I give out free hugs.
You give up. I heard about those free hugs. So, Keith, can you talk a little bit about how this restaurant works for Tim and for your family?
Vicki, the experience that we have with this restaurant has been really nothing short of a miracle for our family. It's the culmination of maybe 10 years of planning, but at this moment, the restaurant, we're in our third year, and the restaurant is profitable, and our son Tim is earning his own living and living independently. Really, really, really a dream come true for our family.
So, Tim, how old are you right now?
I am 27.
By the way, Keith, I'm hearing Tim a whole lot better than I am you. If you could get a little closer to your receiver, I think that would help a lot.
Okay. I'll be sure to speak up.
Okay, terrific. So, Tim, you're 27 years old, and your restaurant has been open for 3 years. How old were you, or maybe Keith can answer this better, when you decided you were going to open a restaurant someday?
Tim, do you want to answer?
You what?
How old were you when you decided you wanted to own a restaurant? Do you remember?
Back when I was a kid.
Yeah, I'd say, Vicki, I'd say probably from the time Tim was a young teenager, started telling people in our social circle that someday he was going to own a restaurant.
And, you know, for those of us who live in a state that is very much based on traditional services, a lot of people, most people, like Tim and my daughter, who also has Down syndrome, are really relegated to working in sheltered workshops or day programs and that type of thing. But you made a decision very early on that Tim didn't want that, and therefore you didn't want it either. So how did you make that not happen? How did you come to a realization or come to a point where the restaurant was an actual possibility?
You know, I think the awakening for us, I think, was as a family realizing what you just said, Vicki, that the prospects for the future for Tim, as they are for so many people with significant disabilities, are that type of a life in a sheltered workshop. And our family decided that we really wanted something more. So we began to develop a long-term plan based around what we believed are Tim's strengths, and clearly based on his own input, his interests, what he really wanted to do in the world. And the result is this fantastic restaurant that we have right now.
So walk me through some of the first steps. Obviously you did some planning, but there had to be some investment of funds, and where did that money come from, and how does that work to actually make this happen for him in reality? Because as I understand it, there is absolutely no state funding involved in his business.
That is correct. That is correct. We basically talked to a couple of banks And we found very, very quickly that banks are not very excited about restaurant ventures of any kind, whether or not you have a disability. And so we decided that we would basically, my wife and I decided that we would basically loan the business, this new business, the money to start. So the startup capital came from a family loan.
Mm-hmm. And then how about the actual startup itself and hiring staff and the support? I don't know what kind of support Tim needs individually to work at the business, but how did that work?
We basically recruited, Vicki, a management team to surround Tim. Tim's interest from the very beginning has been to be the face at the front of the house, greeting people as they come in, working the room, talking to people, connecting and interacting. So we decided based on that what he needed was management that could take care of the basic, more mundane business items,
mm-hmm.
payroll, hiring, firing, ordering food, all of those things. So that's been basically how we approached that, was to hire experienced management to run the business side.
And so over the last 3 years, is the business able to, have Tim and the business able to pay back some of that initial investment that you've made, or are you still carrying that?
We are still carrying that at this point, but this is our third year, and earlier this year, we actually passed the break-even point. So the business is having positive cash flow. And so we are on the beginning edge of us being able to recoup our initial investment in the business.
And I understand that you and your wife are getting close to retirement or are retired. So you really have been able to, in the way that you've set this up and having that management team in place, you've been able to separate yourselves from this business a little bit as well.
We really have. We decided early on that at our age, we're in our 50s, that we've had a great professional career. We are in the beginning stages of retirement and decided that we didn't want to be workers or managers in a restaurant. So we've been able to set it up in such a way that Tim is very independent, both in his personal life as well as his business life.
Now, we really didn't talk about Tim, your personal life. Are you living on your own as well?
Yes, I am. I've been living on my own for over 3 years now.
And do you have a house? Do you have an apartment? What's your living situation?
I have a apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Why by the restaurant.
Okay. And so are you, it's right by the restaurant, so you can walk to work then?
Oh, yeah, I can walk to work in about 2 minutes from here.
Do you work every day?
Work every day except for Tuesday. That's my day off.
Oh, so tomorrow you get the day off, huh?
I do, yeah.
Okay, and so you take care of greeting people as they come in the door, and what kinds of foods do you serve at your restaurant?
We serve like breakfast burritos, a little bit of Mexican dishes, and we serve sandwiches like the Tim's Caribbean Reuben sandwich.
That sounds really good. What's your favorite thing?
My favorite one is the Tim's Caribbean Reuben and the potato fries.
Okay, what's the most difficult thing for you being the owner of a restaurant, Tim?
Sorry about that.
That's okay. What's the hardest thing being the owner of a restaurant like that?
The hardest thing is multitasking, like answering the phone if it rings and taking care of the people to their table.
I understand that you're getting a lot of visitors after all the news coverage, after being on CNN and the Today Show and all those, that you're getting a lot of people who come to your restaurant from other parts of the country. Is that right?
Yes, that is true.
And how do you feel about being so famous?
It feels so awesome right now.
Does it? That's great. If people want more information about Tim's Place, where can they go to get it? Do you have a website?
We do. Tim's website is www.timsplaceabq.com. Lots of information on the website about Tim and his life and the restaurant and all of the things that are happening with Tim. You can also find Tim's Place on Facebook, and a lot of the current events related to Tim are on his business's Facebook page.
So just a word of advice for those folks who are thinking about flying out to Albuquerque to go to Tim's Place, don't go on Tuesday because you won't meet Tim. Right?
Yeah. Sometimes I do come into the restaurant just to eat my meals, like breakfast or lunch, and they say, hey, Tim is here. I'm going to give some hugs.
Well, I'm going to try and come someday so I can get my hug, too. It was great talking to you today, Tim. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Keith, for joining us as well. And for those of you who missed it the first time, the restaurant is called Tim's Place in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The website is timsplaceabq.com. Thanks for joining us today. Listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nyswander, joined today by my guest on the phone, Zachary Fennell, who has written a book called Off Balance. And love to welcome you to the show, Zachary.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Vicki.
Tell us about your book. It's called Off Balance. That's really, you know, I have not had an opportunity to read the book yet, so tell me what I might expect when I do pick it up to read.
Off Balance serves as my teenage memoir about how having a mild case of cerebral palsy affected me socially growing up as a teenager. Off Balance, the title itself kind of is like a play on words. Where off balance you think, or off balance physically, but it's more so. My book focuses on the really social aspect of it. So how, for instance, how having, cerebral palsy, poor balance might have, affected me, with my self-confidence with girls in high school and stuff. So, off balance, well, yes, it's the physical part. It's also a mental part of where it's talking about how it can throw you off balance mentally.
So who is the book intended for? Is it intended for just the general community or for folks who might have cerebral palsy?
When I wrote it, my goal audience was teenagers with disabilities. I've checked with some other people with different disabilities from cerebral palsy to make sure they felt that off balance would be something that others could relate to. And I said mainly, I really wanted to reach, teenagers who might feel discouraged by their disability and, really hopefully inspire them to, use the crochet phrase, you know, turn that frown upside down and start looking at their disability in a positive light. And, but I also feel off balance really is something that, everyone can get something out of. You know, people, you know, parents, they can get something, like, you know, parents of children with disabilities could get something out of it because it gives them a unique insight into kind of like, you know, what their kid might be going through. You know, just older people, you know, with disabilities, adults with disabilities and whatnot will enjoy it because it'll be something that they'll, that it'll just, something they may be able to relate to. You know, I just, even just, you know, able-bodied individuals, I feel like, you know, to be an educational experience for them because it would, you know, it really gives them, how often do you, you know, think about what it would be like to have a disability? So it kind of would give them that kind of, you know, make them stop and think. So then my main target were, you know, teenagers with disabilities, but I really feel like it's something that reaches a broad audience.
And so give us a sense of who you are. What brought you to the point of wanting to write this book?
Okay. Well, the whole, the idea of writing the book came from when I was in high school. Really, my disability brought me to writing because growing up, I was from the Cleveland area, so I was a big fan of the Cleveland Indians, and that was during the 90s. I know that's kind of blasphemy for the Chicago. It might be blasphemy for Illinois area, the Chicago White Sox.
I'm sure they'll forgive you.
I'm an Indians fan, and you know, it was always like my dream was always like play for the Cleveland Indians, and you know, it is my parents safety concerns when you want me to play Little League. So by the time I got to high school, I was kind of like, well, I got to find something to do. And so, you know, I kind of went from, oh, I'll write, you know, if I can't play sports, I'll write about sports. And so I got involved in my student newspaper. And then I went to the college. I went to Notre Dame College of Ohio, which is South Euclid, a suburb of near Cleveland. And it was the same, you know, I just got more and more involved with writing. And I was, you know, as I was getting set to graduate, I wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do. But one of my professors, Sister Corita, Notre Dame College is a Catholic college, and Sister Corita, she, I turned in my final one day, and she, like, I had her for a music class, and then the, previously, I had her for some theology class, theology classes. So I wrote some reflection papers, and she knew about my disability, and like, you know, cause I would put all of myself into those papers. And she just looked at me, and she goes, you know, you are an inspiration to anyone who has to overcome physical trouble, you know, any kind of obstacles. And that really took me back because I never thought of myself as an inspiration. I was just, you know, everything I had, you know, everything I went through, you know, whatever I had to do, to keep my cerebral palsy under control. You know, that was just life. That wasn't anything special. And so I was, at the time I was looking for what, you know, what can I do? And that, you know, those words kind of hit me, and it kind of like, well, I was planning to be a writer anyways. And so it's kind of like, well, maybe, you know, I write a book that it might help inspire some people. So that is really where the whole idea of where the book came from. And, you know, gives a little background into me and, you know, how I got into writing and all that.
Great. So tell us some of the things that people will read when they read your book. What are some of your favorite examples or stories that really kind of give a sense of what this book is all about?
Well, one chapter that seems to be pretty popular among the people who have reviewed my book so far is the fourth chapter, the 8-chapter book, the fourth chapter called My First Crush, and it talks about, it really just talks about my, I entered high school after I, the summer before, and this is talked about in the previous chapters, I had back surgery done because I had diagnosed something else called Sherman's disease. And my back was curving forward at an angle where if it didn't have surgical intervention, I would, you know, it would have eventually crushed my internal organs and just wouldn't be any good for
me. Yeah, no, that doesn't sound like a good thing.
Yeah. So I had the surgery, but as a result, I had that surgery this summer going into my freshman year of high school. And as a result of the surgery, though, we had complications, and I was temporarily paralyzed in my right leg. So I talk about all that in the book, and then like go into high school and I talk about it. My, you know, first, you know, year, I was very secretive about my disability in school. I wanted, you know, I wanted to be normal. And, you know, I use quotations, you know, you can't see it with my hands. I use quotations to say normal. But, you know, I wanted to be normal. So I figured the best way to be normal would be to blend in. And so I tried to hide my disability. And, you know, so it was just, I really felt like an awkward aura. So I talk about, you know, how I try to hide my disability, how that made me, you know, feel awkward around my peers and, you know, affected, you know, how I saw them. And then, like, you know, I talk, you know, all this is leading to really what I'm trying to get into with, you know, the chapter on First Crush, the girl I like, Donna Williams. She, you know, it was just like, the reason, you know, it's like, I talk about in the book, I write something along the lines of, you know, every day before class, you know, I would always keep my eyes down, try to avoid social contact with anyone. But, you know, every day she'd come into class, you know, she, you know, many times she'd say hi to me, and, you know, she was an attractive girl. So just those two things alone is like, you know, I write in my book, you know, it's like, you know, so I developed a crush on her, and it was like one of those two things alone. And I, you know, I joked in my book that, you know, wow, I had high standards. You know, they say, you know, something little to me, and, you know, it's good looking. But, yeah, and then, you know, so I talk about just kind of like my feeling for her and, you know, how I, you know, I liked her, but I was always afraid to initiate conversation with her. And she was a year above me in school, so it was like, you know, freshman year we had a class together, sophomore year we had a class together, and I was like, you know, my freshman year, my sophomore year. And then, you know, I was sophomore year, I was like terrified that, oh no, she's going, no, we're next year when she's a senior, I'm a junior, we're not going to have a class together. And it was like, I was just, I mean, to use lack of a better term, I was really, you know, obsessed with, like, she really, like, you know, was, obsessed in a way with her where it was like, my, you know, I talk again, talk about all this and off balance, you know. You know, on a my good day for me, you know, she'd come in and say, you know, hi, how are you before class? You know, fantastic days. We would actually hold it. She would come in and we would actually hold a actual, you know, like a actual conversation. And like, you know, on a bad day, she'd be too busy to say anything to me. So it was, you know, that's one of the things that seems to, you know, I'm very honest in that chapter just with everything, and I think that's one of the reasons why gotten so many, you know, gotten attention of people reviewing my book. Besides that, I just, I'm particular personal, I'm trying to think of some of my, I talk about my high school graduation, and we had, you know, they graduate high school, you know, we had a into the gymnasium area, check in, get our coordination pinned on us, and then we come down. And the thing is with the gymnasium, though, there's like three steps going into the gymnasium that you know, there's no rails around or anything. So, and something so simple, you know, sounds, I mean, your listeners will know that, you know, with disability, you know, just steps, you know, isn't, oh, you know, something able-bodied individuals can take for granted and not really think about it. But, you know, I was, you know, just go into the gym. I was able to do, it was also difficult, backtrack a second and talk about, I have a fluoride into my, in my shoes because I have a height